States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, Jane Rodd has our trainer's tip, which addresses objectively assessing the quality of work. But first, we have an extract from the discussion that was taken from the Open Judges meeting held at the 2014 Adequan USDF annual meeting, led by Gary Rockwell.
I wanted to bring up one thing. We had a freestyle meeting, and it was discussed if the music fails, and I've run into so many different varieties of that situation. But as a judge, the first thing you need to do when the music fails is ask the rider if they submitted two CDs. Very often they haven't. So it's their responsibility to submit two. If they've submitted one, then as the judge, your next thing out of your mouth should be, then we will replay it again, but if it fails again, then you're eliminated. So obviously we would, if the first CD failed, we would try the second, and then it probably shouldn't be a problem, but it's important to find out if they submitted two right away. Also, once in a while, it's even more important when there's confusion when the horse comes in the ring. Riders don't know that they're allowed to stop and object and say, I can't hear my music, or they don't even know that they can say, it's not my music. Sometimes there's confusion at the beginning of the test, and if that happens, then the first words out of your mouth should be, is this your music? Because sometimes the music's playing, I have to go in. He already rang the bell, so they started, and it's not their music. You know, it's crazy. Jeannie, you had another question?
I was going to say, one of the questions, are you allowed to ask, did you do a sound check?
You know what's really upsetting? At the biggest CDIs in Wellington, only half the riders come to the sound check. So now I have asked the announcer to give me a list ahead of time of who came and who didn't. Because then I have a little idea when the music screwed up, I'm going to be much more lenient if they did a sound check and it was fine a few minutes ago. Now, but if they didn't even bother coming to the sound check, then I know that there probably is going to be a problem here. Right. I know. I realize it's not required. Now, let me say this. Very often, freestyles are in an evening performance, and it's very disruptive when it's the wrong music or there's a problem with the music. It really disrupts the whole show. So even though the rider is not required to go to a sound check, it's really stupid not to do it. And then go in the ring and find out that you submitted the wrong music, or it's terribly scratched, or too loud or something like that. It really disrupts a horse show. So I strongly suggest that all riders should do that. At the biggest Wellington CDI 2 years ago, there was a little disturbance at the end of the ring. Of course, I'm sitting at CM so far away, I can't get anybody's attention. I'm waving, the rider just... Then the music comes back on and it goes off, and then it comes back on. And she comes in the ring and the music goes off. So I said the first thing to her, is this your music? She said, yes. Technically, it was her music, but it was her intermediate one music, and this was the Grand Prix. So first, the riders do lie. They do, yeah. And so then I allowed her to reschedule after a break to come back again and ride again, and this was all, everything gone wrong, but no one informed me that the announcer did all this change around himself, and nobody informed me about it, and so she won the class, and she shouldn't have even qualified. So, another story, but just so many things go wrong. But we had this previous example, I think it's the one you were talking about, Jeannine, that Axel was there for. The rider should be aware that they can say, I can't hear my music, and stop. But they're not all. I mean, we judges don't know the rules, but we carry a rule book. Riders don't know the rules, and they don't carry a rule book. So, but in that case, I'm wondering, why didn't the judge, if the music was skipping so badly, why didn't the judge then stop it? The judge should. If the judge can't hear the music, or the judge thinks it's skipping a lot, the judge should stop it. I'm a bell ringer myself. When things start to go ring, I just ring the bell. Rather than get into a mess, I think it's better if you think, wait a minute, this isn't right, this isn't going right, this isn't fair. I just ring the bell, and then they have the opportunity to tell me what the problem is, or to go back and start from where they took off, or what they've already done is scored. But they can either start over again or whatever if it's a mess. It just takes always a judgment call. Sometimes, like at the finals at Kentucky, we had a couple windstorms come through. But you don't know if it's the first and last wind gust, or if it's the first that's going to go on all day. I mean, if we started stopping for every little thing that can happen, I think you have to make a judgment call on whether it's outside, some kind of outside interference that's not fair that none of the other riders will have to face. Weather is usually not, thunder, lightning, yes, but otherwise, heavy rain, that kind of thing, we don't stop for. If suddenly a vendor cart rolls into the arena, I think then you stop. And just when you think you've seen everything, you get a new surprise. Okay, anything, yes?
So it would be permissible as a judge in a freestyle competition if like it did at the Nationals, the music was skipping enough? Could the judge say, stop?
Yeah, why not? Sure. But keep in mind, if you let it go through the whole way test, through the test, it gets worse and worse and worse. She can't really ride to it, and then she did anyway. And then in the end, then it was too late to do anything. Okay. Any other issues you'd like to talk about? Yes, darling.
I've heard a lot of discussion about the saddle pad logo.
I think we have to look this up individually. If you're a logo person, we can't know all that, can we? And as Janine said yesterday, also another factor is that some things are allowed in the warm-up arena and outside the arena that are not allowed in the arena. No, but just so you know, all right, it's not all entirely our responsibility as a judge to notice all of this kind of thing. But if you think there is a problem, or if the TD after the test inspects the horse and finds an illegal logo, then they will come back to you and ask you to either have the management or you eliminate, because the inspection belongs to the test just like the veterinary inspection does for blood. So we can't do a blood inspection in the arena. We have to do it after the test. That means if the horse walks around and goes to the inspection and has blood, then it comes back to the judge and the judge eliminates. It's going to be, am I right, Janine? It's going to be the same with logos. If the horse goes out and you find it's an illegal one, then you come back and ask the judge. But it is something somebody could protest at a championship. If they see another rider go in and win and has a logo that's too big, or it's illegal because it's some kind of advertising, then it can make serious problems. So it is something we should be familiar with. Not exactly one I want to focus on for the rest of my life, but we should be aware of it because it can happen. I think we have a very good judge training system in this country, but I think maybe the best in the world. We don't quite have our fingers on all the judges the way the European countries do. I don't know exactly how, but they seem to find out that one judge is too high or too low, and suddenly they just disappear. But we're not allowed to do that in our country. So we can't, and we have a huge number of judges. So it's not like we have a whole variety of people of all different ages, some that have been in there long before the L program and never did do the L program. Some like me who were in before the L program, but then came back and took the L program and learned a lot. But a lot of this is L program, and that's really a success. And I think that when you say that they're making more consistent comments, that's where this is coming from. It's good to hear. And then just a comment on variety of scores from judges. It's probably the biggest goal of a judge as they start their training in forever, that they develop a scale that travels with them wherever they go, whether it be the smallest training show or a small national show or a CDI or a world championship or whatever they go. It would be good if all the horses you ever judge came in the arena for the same class, you could still fit them together with the score that you gave them when they were out there alone. Rather than, say, give a horse a 70% at a training show and then in a regional final give it a 60% for the same rider, for the same ride, because suddenly it's a regional final and now there are 25 good horses. So it takes a lot of years practice to try to develop a scale that where you're not influenced by the quality of the competition or where you happen to be that day, or by breeds or any of the other things that maybe somehow influence you early on and general appearance of horses or how they move or something. Somehow you, over a long period of time, you'd begin to fit things together in a way that's fair to everybody. You can be kind with your comments. You don't have to be kind with your numbers. I think, as Lois told us in our earlier meeting, most of the complaints that a licensed official receives are not about judges judging, but about their attitude or behavior at a horse show. The horses that are at the very bottom are the ones that need the most help. So you should be able to try to find a way to be helpful to those people. I think in a clinic, when I have clinics, usually the worst horse that I have improves the most, right? So I think you have to take your best effort with those particular horses that are so far off, because they're obviously, the rider thinks she's doing the right thing with the experience she has. She'd be riding a different way if she thought another way was better. So this is what she knows, and for the day, you have to try to be, I mean, my father used to say, what does it cost to be nice to people? And it doesn't cost anything, you know? So you have to be careful how you deal with people. There's no reason to cause a house burned down and a family killed here. It's just we want to try to give her some, you know, general help to try to improve the situation. Well, riders want to know, even if they get an 8, they'd like to know why not a 9. And you're being paid for a whole day and you're sitting there. Why? What does it cost to write a few words on there? I mean, I write a lot of comments. I mean, sometimes it would be a long explanation, why not a 9? But other times there is something you could pinpoint, you know, that if you considered in your mind, you decide no because at K the horse did something or whatever. That, I think that's certainly worth pointing out. I mean, I think we have to be generous with our time. Yeah. And I think we teach that in the L program, and I think a lot of judges do that. I know some judges don't even give any comments. It's kind of lazy. It's also, I will not pretend that judging is easy, because when we start working with the L candidates and the little R's, it's hard for them. They're under pressure to make a lot of comments, but they don't really have the experience yet or the overview to decide what really is worth mentioning. So sometimes they mention everything, and then it's all meaningless, you know. That's something that takes just some years of deciding, and what the further remarks are really pretty much a more personal opinion of this particular judge of what is the main problem here. And I don't think you can do that too early on. But as time goes by, as you begin to think, if this horse had a little more energy, then this would all be easier. Or if this rider's contact was just quieter, then I think this horse could really move or whatever. But it takes a little time to develop that. Yeah. Yeah, we just finished updating the glossary for the new test. We had to make some changes because of our terminology and submission. There were quite a few things we had to change to coincide with the new test. And then we also went back and simplified a little bit. There was a little terminology in there that was a bit medical and more than what we need to do. I don't want to go to a glossary and then have to go to a medical book to figure out what the real answer is. So we did simplify, but I think it'll be fine. Anything else? Yes, Axel.
We've been working so hard on the L program, and it's such a wonderful program, to get him to little R. But now we have to think about fostering and improving the judging from little R to big R to S. And another way of doing that is to judge in panels. It is important for the rider, but it's equally important for the judges. Because as a judge, when you have somebody else to judge with, you really have to be sure what score you're giving, and that can be irresponsible sometimes and sit at sea and pontificate, because your fellow judge might not see it that way. And it's a wonderful way later on after a class or during a break, say, hey, what did you give for such and such? A super learning experience. In the FAI panels, where we judge with 5 judges, sometimes the most interesting part of the day, we sit around a table and talk about, hey, what did you do with such and such? And how did you handle this situation? We learn. It's a constant learning experience. But for here, because we don't do this very much yet, any time it is possible, show managers, please listen. Try to make yourself available, especially the younger judges, volunteer to judge as a second judge or a third judge. The riders will love it because they get a totally different view. So it's wonderful, wonderful training ground for the rider and for the judges. Now we just have to get show management on board, because they naturally have an excuse. It costs money. Okay, and bottom line, it's always important, and we understand that. But there must be a way, a goodwill and a little scheduling and maybe some sponsoring, I don't know, to make it possible that we have it in as many classes as possible, a second judge. we truly should not have a one-judge class anymore at fourth level or above, but I think we should also start lower.
Sure, manager, I think it's a great idea, of that notwithstanding with competitors. However, what I want to encourage the small R's to do, volunteer your time, make yourself available, offer to competition management, I would like to judge in panels so that I can get those second level test grades. Take the responsibility on yourself.
He's right, especially that it really would improve the judging in this country, because in Europe it's not very many classes, even at the lower level where there's only one judge. And I have been to many shows where it would have been possible to have two judges for the FEI classes, and they didn't bother with it. Also, I think it's important that show managers use good judgment on who to choose. But, I mean, I think among the younger judges, the little R's and big R's, some of them are well-known. Some of them have enough reputation in some area that you could take a chance and let them go ahead and judge on panels. Would be a great help, because we're trying very hard to find ways to improve the judging in this country. And when we discussed it a bit the other night, this was one weakness we felt, that we sometimes at regional finals, we judge with judges who never get to judge on panels. They are very accustomed to doing things their way every week. They go out there alone and they do what they want to do. And it's sometimes it doesn't fit very well with the judges who are judging on panels all the time.
And our thanks again to Gary Rockwell for leading that discussion. And now Jane Rodd has our training tip this week on objectively assessing the quality of work.
Most of us do quite a lot of schooling with no eyes on the ground. And with no feedback, it's very easy to lose sight of exactly what the gold standard is, both for the gaits and the movements we're riding. So I'm going to give you four tips to help you when you're riding on your own to keep those goals in sight and make sure that you practice things well. Because I'm sure you've heard the saying, practice makes perfect. But the truth is, only things that we practice well get better. If we're not practicing things well, it can start to feel good because it becomes familiar when it's actually really not what we want. And even if it is good, maybe it's not the best we and our horses could do. So I have four tips to help you always achieve your best and to practice correctly. So tip number one is to use the training scale, the pyramid of training. This is not just a theoretical construct. It was actually written as a tool to provide a scaffold that you can use to guide and assess the fundamental requirements at all levels. So my first tip is to be sure you know that training scale and you know the definition of each step on the training pyramid, and then to actually use it by disciplining yourself to run through it in your mind at regular intervals during your session and ask yourself some questions, and I have some examples of those questions. So first of all, is my horse keeping a rhythm with the energy and appropriate tempo according to his level? Secondly, is my horse mentally and physically relaxed so that he feels supple and elastic? And that applies to you too. Thirdly, is my horse accepting all my aids? Does he go and stop in a millisecond when we ask him to and turn and bend, which allows you to maintain the connection? Fourthly, do you have the energy and thrust? And is that energy and thrust the best you can achieve? And those two things together are what we determine as being impulsion. Fifthly, as you work, have you got the alignment and the balance? And is that alignment and balance improving so that your horse is straight, relevant to the movement that you're riding? And lastly, is he in self-carriage? Does his forehand feel light? Does he feel as collected as he's capable of being for his level of training and fitness? So, to sum that up, use the training scale. It's your most important resource. You could refer to it as being your Bible. And in tip four, I'll give you some ideas on how to recognize and assess what you're feeling. So that takes us on to tip two. Tip two is do your homework. And by that, I mean learn the USDF or FEI definitions of the gaits and movements you regularly ride. And that will differ, again, according to the level you're training at. So let's take a really simple one, for example, the trot. There is a definition of the trot, and you can find this in the USDF or the FEI rule book. So dressage rule number 104 describes the trot to us. And based on that definition, we again can come up with a series of questions that you can ask yourself while you're trotting around the arena. And these apply to any type of trot. Is your trot rhythmical? Is there a moment of suspension? Does the rhythm and suspension stay the same through things like turns, lines, circles, leg yield, and other lateral movements? Does the horse always move freely and actively forward? And is the trot the same from the moment you make the transition up to the moment you prepare to change gait or rider movement? They're great questions to guide you in keeping your trot consistent and meeting the definition. But we have to take that a stage further. We have to think in the trot how it will vary according to the level. So, for example, if you're just riding a working trot, is that trot between your horse's collected and medium trot? Is he on the bit, going forward, even and elastic? If you're riding a medium trot, is it part way between working and extended trot? And the definition tells us in medium trot that your horse should have a rounder frame, a consistently longer step, the nose a little in front of the vertical, and a slightly lower neck carriage with more push from behind. So do your homework. Tip two is do your homework. Because if you don't know what questions to ask yourself about your work, you have no way to monitor the quality of it. Tip number three is to set very specific goals for each session that you ride. Base these on your long-term goals and be prepared to revise them, because horses are animals, they're not machines, they come out and maybe have a bad day. But if you don't have those goals to begin with, it's difficult to know where to start. It's easy to get sidetracked and, dare I say it, bored when you're schooling alone day after day. And we all become unfocused. So goals help you maintain that focus, and they make sessions more interesting for you and therefore for your horse. For horses to progress, they need to do correct, repetitive work that promotes mental understanding of what you require, builds up their muscles progressively so they can do it with ease, and inspires confidence and willingness as you reward their efforts. And goals will help you to stick to that plan and to do that. So let's take an example of that. We might set a goal to improve the leg yielding. So my goal today is to school the leg yielding until it gets better. So there's a series of questions you can come up with to help yourself, as you ride, assess whether you're achieving that goal. So first of all, before you start, are you clear on the correct aids, and are you sitting well enough to be able to give those aids effectively? Do you know what a good leg yield looks like and feels like? Maybe you're lucky enough to have mirrors and you can actually watch yourself. Have you warmed up appropriately before you start working on the leg yield, and do you have a plan of where to ride it? Do you know where in the ring you're going to ride it? Are you following a good line, and while you're riding your leg yield, what issues are occurring ongoing as it happens? Analyze those issues, and what exercises can you use to fix them? Is the horse getting stressed or fatigued is another good question to ask, because then you may need to take a break and come back to it later. And lastly, can you produce results consistently in different places in the arena and on both reins? So if things go well, you may have time to move on to another topic in the same lesson. But on the other hand, you may have to spend that lesson and the next 10 lessons working just on the leg yield. And that's the whole point of having a goal. Unless you set those goals to begin, you won't be able to plan a systematic approach to schooling them, and you won't be able to measure your success. My last tip for today, tip number four, is to use self-talk, visualization, and other tools to assess and improve your work. I live in Vermont year-round. Tools which help me self-assess also help to alleviate the boredom which can plague horses and riders when they're confined to an indoor arena for months on end. Self-talk can be used as teaching yourself. You can do it in your head, or you can do it out loud if that helps you. For example, you can imagine what your instructor would be saying and repeat it to yourself, you know, as if they were on your shoulders, a little invisible being whispering in your ear. You can recall what you read in a book, and you can use that as a form of instruction. Or you can verbalize what you're feeling as you ride, talk to yourself about it as if, for example, you were judging it. Self-talk helps to prompt you and to clarify your thoughts so that they become actions. Visualization is a little similar to self-talk, but it's about making pictures in your head rather than words. So imagine you were watching yourself on a big screen TV. What would you be seeing? Or picture the perfect leg yield. Imagine what it would look like if you saw a professional rider riding it, and try to copy it as you ride. By seeing what should happen in your mind, it can help you to identify mistakes and see what needs to be improved. Lastly, I'm going to talk about some of the tools we can use. These tools come in all shapes and sizes. Mirrors are one that we all love, I think. They don't tell lies. As long as you use them, they show you what you're really, what is really happening, not what you're feeling or what you think you're feeling. You must know what you should be seeing, though, to know if they reflect what you intend to do. The arena itself can also be used as a tool. Use the letters to judge accuracy of transitions, and use inside tracks to assess your straightness. But you can also have fun. For example, make up exercises such as counting strides between letters to see if you can get in fewer strides, lengthening, or more strides, shortening. Tools such as cones can be used to improve shapes of circles and can be fun and very revealing. Ground poles and cavalletti are wonderful to develop test movements and balance. Lunging and long lining provide different ways for you to observe your horse and school certain movements, such as lengthening and shortening of strides. In-hand work takes experience and practice, but can be invaluable in establishing submission and engagement. Now, there are obviously many more, but I'm probably running out of time at this point, so I'm going to sum up. Most of us would like to ride under the watchful eye of a good trainer more often than time, money, and circumstances allow. But with a thoughtful and well-prepared approach, you can become your own trainer no matter what level you're at. All it requires is education, dedication, common sense, and above all, honesty in your self-assessment. If you make a commitment to practicing the best you can be at all times, you'll be surprised at just how far you and your horse can grow together.
Our thanks to Jane Rodd for this week's training tip. And a reminder, if you're new to the podcast, that you can find a training tip in several episodes. The podcast is available for download from the iTunes podcast store to your smartphone podcast apps. And be sure to check out eTrack, the USDF's online learning centre and resource for dressage and equine education. You'll find a link on the front page at usdf.org. And we hope you'll join us again next week for the USDF podcast. And don't forget that the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community. Until the next time, thank you for listening.